Club, the show that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. Now, here's your host, John Austin.
Thanks, Ed, and welcome to this edition of the Book Club's monthly special. Today, featuring two of the best writers we've ever had on the show. First, I want to give a thank you to two of my favorite people on Earth, Coco Chin Drucker and her husband Johnny Drucker, for helping me with some of the Chinese pronunciations in this first interview. I'll probably still screw them up, but anyway, thank you. So back with us today, again, is one of my favorite authors, Virginia Gray, to talk about the manuscript for her new book, The Fortunate One. Now, if you haven't read one of Virginia's books, you have a great treat waiting for you, and you can't go wrong picking any of her books to begin with. I'm so happy to say welcome back again to Virginia Gray.
Thank you, John. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. I love reading your books. It's so much fun. This one is really interesting. Now, we're going to begin in just a second with a brief synopsis of The Fortunate One, which is based on a true story. And writing this story apparently gave you some major challenges. You want to tell us about that first?
Oh, sure. The biggest challenge, and you'll find this as we go along, was the history of technology. This woman was born in 1983, and so technology has advanced since then at a shocking rate. And keeping up with what was happening at the time, both technologically and just in her life, made things a little tricky. Remember, Google is only 20 years old, and the first iPhone wasn't released until 2007. So it really kept me on my toes, you know, as I was doing my fact checking.
Okay. Well, let's start now with a synopsis, very brief synopsis, because we're going to take you through the book. But this is a fascinating story. Tell us a little bit about what's happening here.
Okay, well, this young girl named Maze, was born in 1983 to an impoverished couple in China's Hunan province. And there were only about 150 people living in her mountain village at the time, and most were farmers. And the exciting thing about this is she starts out in very humble beginnings, and where she ends up is really quite amazing. Anyway, her father was basically abandoned as a child in this village, and he was in such desperate need that he eventually resorted to eating grass just to survive. And then her mother had it only slightly better. She was one of 11 siblings and one of the few to actually make it to adulthood. She was her mother's favorite girl until she fell in love with Maze's father, and of course he was the poorest of the poor. So when they married, Maze's mother was basically disowned from the family.
Okay. All right. Now, let's talk. The book actually starts in Atlanta, and this is with the protagonist, and she starts out discussing her village in China.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, it's a mountain village. It's up high in the mountains, very rural. I mean, I don't know if you could think about Appalachia as possibly something that might equate or something really more remote than that.
Okay. Now, Maisie, I'm close with that, I think, but there is a confrontation over a peach that will actually stop you right away. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, her family, it's kind of difficult. Her father had a really rough relationship. He had several siblings, and really all of them were abandoned after his mother passed away when he was little. And so Maze is very young at this point. She's about four. And her parents, her mom says, you know, run over to Baba's beech tree. Baba's her his father in Chinese. Run over and get a peach and bring it back for your dessert tonight. And so she's, you know, a little girl, and she's thrilled. So she runs over to the peach tree's actually near her youngest uncle's house. And he's not a nice guy. He's very unkind to her. He's terrible to her mother. I mean, he actually gets physically abusive with her mother on occasion. And it's just very hard. And so she goes to get one of these peaches, and her uncle happens to be standing there. And so he's sweet. He teases her, you know, which peach do you want? Oh, that one looks really good. And he plucks it for her, and then he takes a bite of it. And he laughs and says, you're not getting any peaches from this tree. And he eventually runs this little four-year-old off by throwing rotten fruit at her. Okay. So this is, it's terrible.
Okay. things that the people here and you know, are not going to understand how the, these things can happen. But they're now we're going to introduce the doctor for a reason, and all of a sudden, Maze has a new name, and this one is Hong Bo. Tell us why.
In China, in 1979, to curb China's rapidly growing population, China invoked a one-child policy, and so parents were only allowed to have one child. And after the first child, women were actually forced to abort any further pregnancies. And there was an organization for family planning that would search the villages and take these pregnant women and take them to abortion clinics. It was a very scary time, and just an aside, around 2015, there was talk of lifting that ban, but I can't tell you that's actually happened. So it's a pretty scary situation for women there. And it's also no secret that traditionally the Chinese culture has favored boys over girls. Social security doesn't exist in China, and the sons are responsible for the care of their parents. And once a daughter's married, she's responsible for her husband's family, so she's not of great value at that point. And so add to this, in the rural area, the need for strong backs to work in the fields and farming communities, and so you have a recipe for, for disaster in the female population. Well, Maze gets sick at about age 5, and her parents need to get medical attention for her, so they take her to this doctor. And when the doctor finds out that Maze doesn't have a name, and let me step back and say that Maze translates in her dialect to just girl. So her parents hiding the pregnancy and hiding her birth because her mother wanted to keep the child. I should back up. Maze has an older brother named Ming, and Ming is 6 years older than she is. So when her mother became pregnant with the second child, she hid the pregnancy under baggy clothes and continued to work in the fields until she had to give birth. And then she hid at her sister's house until the baby was born. Now, after the baby's born, they're fine, they're safe, but the parents can suffer pretty greatly for that infraction. So anyway, Maze is sick, and they take her to the doctor, and the doctor can't understand why she doesn't have a name other than girl. And he becomes suspicious and starts asking questions. And he soon learns that that Maze is a second child, and the doctor has no choice but to register her with the government. But he does take mercy on the family by giving her a boy's name in hopes that the government will be a little bit more understanding because, as I said, boys are favored. So the doctor records her name as Hong Bo, which basically means waves of luck.
Okay. And they haven't had too much luck, but...
They haven't had much luck at all.
No,
it's been bad.
The thing that actually is scary here is, in the next thing, they actually get a call from the organization. The organization shows up to see if there is two children, and I don't know what they do at that point if they find out that there are two and one of them is a girl, but they're looking at this and they're in trouble.
Right. Actually, they come by. They really are living in a little, basically, mud hut at this point with grass on the roof. I mean, it's incredibly backwards. But they show up. This organization, people from it, show up and they rough her dad up. They rough her dad up pretty badly, and they demand that he pay a fine for having the second child. And that fine equates to about $5 U.S. Now, this is an extraordinary sum of money for such a poor couple, and they promise they'll pay it after their crops are harvested, but even in doing so, they know they're going to be penniless.
Okay. Now, they start making a little money because they find a guy who lives in town, basically, not in the rural area where they are, but he lives in town, and apparently he steals some metal and sells them to Maze's mother, which ends up with an arrest of her mother, and she ends up going to prison.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So the kids are, the parents have to find some way to make money. They have to be able to feed their children, and so after this fine. And so they start actually a recycling business, and they press the kids into simply walking up and down the streets of this town, collecting cans and bottles and, you know, anything recyclable that's on the side of the road. And it's winter, and they're terribly cold, and there's no heat in this building, and they don't have coats. And they're walking through the streets, you know, with the wind blowing. Their faces become chapped and start peeling. It's really bad. And then, as you said, the mom gets caught selling stolen merchandise because the guy is stealing the metal and bringing it to her. She's buying it from him and then reselling it. And so she ends up going to jail for that. You can imagine how terrified a five-year-old, you know, is hanging off her mother's leg when the police are trying to drag her away. So it was pretty scary.
Okay. Now, actually, at this point, Hong Bo goes to school, has new friends, but this is followed by a dog attack, and she ends up getting a new name. This is Gogo. Tell us what happened there.
Okay. Well, she goes to elementary school. Her dad had no education, and her mother only had about 3 years' worth. And so it was really important to them that their children learn how to read and write. So after prison, her mother goes back to the recycling business to help pay for books and supplies. Now, May starts school, and the school is on the other side of the mountain, and it takes about an hour to walk there from her village. And at 6 years old, she begins making that daily round-trip trek. She and her cousins carry torches with them, you know, so they can see, because they have to leave well before sunup. Keep in mind, this is now 1990, so, you know, where we would have flashlights in our back pocket, they're carrying torches. Well, anyway, they have had a huge rain, and she's muddy and cold and whatnot, and they're coming on their way back from school, and they suddenly hear this dog, and this crazy, scary, large dog comes out of nowhere and starts chasing the children. And so they jump from, you know, they jump off the path into the trees. And the two cousins that she's with, they're both a little bit older and a little bit, you know, less afraid. And they're shaking, they're throwing their torches, and they're yelling and banging things. And eventually the dog goes away, but they end up, you know, covered in mud and cuts and whatnot by the time they get home. So this was pretty terrifying for her.
Okay.
All in all, kind of scary all the way around.
Yeah, you know, the whole book is scary. Going through all of the things that this woman went through, and as we mentioned at the beginning, this is a true story. Actually, it turns out she does have a new name at this point, and this is Gogo, right? Gogo.
Right. Okay. Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You can tell us why the.
Oh, I was going to say that so she's at school, and she's got this boy's name, and she's wearing pigtails and, you know, and a little outfit, and her friends can't understand why she's got a boy's name, so they tease her about it, and eventually she decides to give herself a nickname, and she decides that she tries several out and chooses Guoguo, which is a name that honors her family surname. So this is her name that she carries on into adulthood, and, you know, and today that's what she's called. So it's Guoguo.
Okay. Now, it turns out that Guoguo is a great cook. And for that reason, and apparently that reason only, because they have marriages that are put together by the families, but she is in great demand as a marriage partner, and she's, what, 14 or something, 13 or 14?
Closer to 12. It's really hilarious. Yeah, during harvest time, migrant workers were hired to come and help, and this became overwhelming for the family because the migrant workers stay with the family and the family is responsible for feeding them. So Maze's mother teaches her how to cook, and over the next few years she does become really very, you know, well known for her cooking skills. Now her grandmother, who's a fairly wicked person, she decides that since her daughter married so poorly that maybe her granddaughter she can marry off to a better family. But her mother, Maze's mother, refuses to have any matchmaking deals. both, because, you know, she fell in love, and she thinks that May should have that same opportunity.
Okay. But that's not what Guoguo has in mind. And she ends up getting, a job in a fabric factory, which she is actually fired from.
Yes. She's a really clever girl, but she is a terrible student. And after eighth grade, she decides to call it quits with school. And her father helps her get a job at a fabric factory. And the conditions there are poor, but her father knows somebody who knows somebody. And the next thing you know, she's got a fairly nice quality control job. And all of that is fine until her supervisor begins making passes at her, and eventually he tries to actually molest her. And Maze's brother, Ming, she runs and tells him, and Ming marches in there, and you know, he and this guy have it out, and of course that results in Maze being fired.
Okay, Ming, her brother, they're all good characters, but this guy is a terrific character. He must be a really wonderful guy because he does have her back, it seems, most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So she's fired from that, but she ends up in a new city with a new job and a big problem. And one of the problems is that she goes to work in the Bin Lang factory. Now, I never heard that word before, but apparently it's some kind of drug.
Right. It's a nut. It turns out she wants to get her own job after she feels like she shamed her dad, even though she didn't do anything wrong. She wants to get her own job, and so she goes around from town to town looking for someone to hire, looking for a job. And so she you know, discovers this Bin Lang factory. Now this is a nut. It's native to Hunan, and people chew it, and they become addicted to it, and it's a drug. And so she ends up basically getting a job in a drug processing factory, and this is not a good thing. The conditions there are absolutely terrible. They treat the workers as if they're prisoners or criminals. She sleeps there, eats there, works all night. It's just really bad, and so eventually she's able to, I don't want to say escape, but she quits and gets the heck out of there as fast as she can.
Okay. We're talking to Virginia Gray about her newest novel. It's a terrific book. It's called The Fortunate One. Now, there's a new character that comes into play here. His name is Chang, and there's a budding romance and the first kiss and then a breakup that follows because Chang has other things on his mind.
Well, Chang gives her first kiss, and that was very, very exciting for her. It's a teenage crush. And then he was the doctor's son, and they always called him the peacock at school because he was always a show-off. He always had the fanciest bikes, fanciest clothes, whatnot. But he was looking pretty good, as she became a teenager. And so, anyway, he gives her a first kiss, and she thinks there's really something there. And then he stops coming by to visit her all of a sudden. He'd been coming every day all summer, and then he just stopped, and she doesn't understand why. So she finally goes to confront him and finds out that he's got another girl on the side, and they have words, and she ends up, they break up, and she ends up going up to his bedroom, throwing all his clothes on the floor and stomping on them.
Okay. There's another one here that she ends up, Guang ends up, this is a first date with another guy, which ends very badly, because he happens to be a gangster, and he doesn't understand why she's upset about that.
Yes, so she takes an apprenticeship and learns how to become a spa person, we'll call it, someone who does facials and nails and whatnot. And so she gets a job with and meets some lovely women who end up being her lifelong friends. But she gets a job at the spa. And this guy, Guan, sees her, and he starts flirting with her, and he asks her on a date. Well, she's a fairly naive, sweet girl, and he wants a lot more from her than that she's willing to give. And when she finds out he's a gangster who actually hurts people for money, he's like the muscle, then she completely freaks out. And she tells him she doesn't want to date him because if they break up, he might cut her hand off. And so I know, and she's absolutely sincere about this. And when that doesn't work, the next day she comes to work and he's standing outside the spa waiting for her. And she tells him, look, this is not happening. And since, the gangster thing, he had arguments for that. She said, I don't like you because you're poor. I don't want to date you because you're poor. Now, this is clearly not true because he sends her lots of flowers and candy. He's really lavishing stuff on her. But he says, well, if you think I'm poor, I'll go rob a bank. Well, she's shocked. She's and afraid that if he does something so ridiculous, she might get arrested just for knowing him. And so he shows up with wads of money and tries to give it to her. And she is absolutely beside herself. This guy will not listen. And so finally, she decides, this is horrible, but she decides to, she tells him, you are ugly and I can never be with someone so ugly as you. You're ugly, you know, outside as well as inside. And she feels really miserable about this, but it actually finally does it. And he leaves heartbroken and she's off the hook.
Okay. Now I'm going to end the plot here because I want to have a few minutes here to talk to you. But still to come, folks, there's all kinds of things here. There's the plan to kill Fu, kill the landlord game, life and death struggle, accident, blindness, nose, eye. This book is really rich. Now, actually, we're in a situation where the book is really not yet available. But tell them how they can stay with us and get it when it first comes out.
Well, as the book, we're hoping to get it out pretty soon. But in the meantime, if you would like to, if you're interested, you can drop by my website. It's VirginiaGray.com, and there are links to my other books. There are giveaways you might be interested in, and I'll keep you posted and let you guys know when the book is actually released and available for purchase.
Okay, and your website is actually very, very helpful. So be sure to go there. And if you read this woman's work, one, you will be hooked forever. But anyway. I want to ask you a couple of things here. The first three books were very different than this one because they took place in the corporate world and spanned the big city and life in the South. Why this new book? Where did this come from?
Well, it was really it was actually just kind of an accident. My family went on vacation to Jamaica, and while we were there, I was chatting it up with this woman, and it turned out her husband was the best man in a destination wedding at the resort. And so, you know, we chit-chatted, talked about China and whatnot, and I learned that, you know, she met her tall American, brown-haired, blue-eyed husband in Shanghai, and he was working for UPS at the time. And as I said, my forte is really romantic comedy, and so my mind immediately went to rom-com about, you know, falling in love, different cultures, all the problems that could cause, and I thought this would be wonderful. And so I asked her if she would mind if I wrote a story about her relationship, and she thought that would be a lot of fun. And so we started communicating, and she returned to China shortly thereafter to visit her family. And so as we were corresponding, she uses an app called WeChat. And so we were using that app, and that app allowed me to text her questions and allowed her to record her answers verbally. So I had that to listen to over and over again. It made me nuts because China is 12 hours off from Eastern time. And so I was scurrying to the bathroom in the middle of the night when the phone dinged, to keep to not wake up my husband or my family. But it became readily apparent from her story that this was nothing short of amazing and clearly women's fiction rather than romantic comedy. And so I've just followed it, I've followed it wherever it took me. And I'm just on fire about this story. And I'm determined. I want to share it with the American people because, you know, we're in a situation now, you know, we're dealing with China, you know, in business, we're, you know, discussing all kinds of tariffs and whatnot, and it's just, I think, really important to step back and look at the people, you know, who are these people, the actual people, not the government, and, to learn how they live, and I just think it's incredibly interesting.
Okay, and this book will actually be available within a few months.
Absolutely.
Okay. Are you working? We only have about a minute and a half, but is there another, do you have another project going, or are you just working on this?
Well, actually, I have two. I think authors have, you know, lots of things on the back burner, but I have another story that I'm writing, and that drops us back into the rom-com genre and back to the South in North Carolina, and it's about a young doctor who ends up in a very small, claustrophobic town, also in eastern North Carolina, but not the same one. And what she comes in contact with is, you know, a lot of chauvinistic kind of attitudes towards women. And she's trying to actually do cancer research, and she's trying to do some really good things. In the meantime, there's this clown doctor that keeps trying to, you know, steal her away to do all kinds of, you know, just to not take her job seriously because he doesn't really take his seriously. There's a lot of stuff going on under the radar there.
Okay, and they could follow that on your website. Folks,
absolutely.
Okay, folks, I'm telling you, this woman is a fantastic writer. Read one of her books, as I've said before, you'd be hooked for life, or until Virginia stops writing, which I hope will never, ever happen. We've been talking to Virginia Gray about her newest novel, The Fortunate One. Now stay tuned for the second half of our program featuring Patrick Gehry right after these messages.